The South African photojournalist Ernest Cole began chronicling the everyday lives of black people under apartheid when he was just a teenager. It culminated in his powerful book, House of Bondage, which was published in 1967. But then he spent the last half of his life in exile and died in 1990 at the age of just 49. When he was stationed in South Africa in the mid-60s, Joseph Lelievel, the former New York Times executive editor, befriended Mr. Cole and wrote the introduction to House of Bondage. Ernest Cole's photographs can be seen in the exhibition Ernest Cole, Photographer at NYU's Gray Art Gallery, now until December 6th, and in the accompanying catalog published by the Hasselblad Foundation, which organized the show. I'm very pleased to welcome Joseph Lelievel back to our show today to tell us about Ernest Cole's life and work. Hello.
Hi, it's great to be here.
When were you the New York Times correspondent in South Africa?
Well, I had two stints there, 14 years apart. The first one lasted only 11 months. They kicked me out, and that's when I got to know Ernest. Then, through a long, odd series of events, I wound up in South Africa again in 1980. And that time I lasted and stayed a little more than 3 years.
So you met Ernest because you were looking for photographs to accompany your articles?
No, he found me. I had the Times, through some arrangement, had a small office in one of the Johannesburg newspapers. One day this young black man just showed up at my door and introduced himself. He had two Nikons on his shoulder, and we fell into conversation.
And as a black African, he had access to places that most of the photographers didn't have. Were there many black photographers?
There were quite a number of black photographers, but they I don't want to exaggerate that, but there were perhaps a half dozen very active and good ones. Most of the English language papers would have had black photographers. But they mostly covered politics and the what has been called all through these years the struggle. They covered the movement. They covered the arrest of demonstrators. They covered the great trials where people like Mandela were charged with treason. But Ernest didn't go in for that. Ernest had a much more subtle vocation.
He had been influenced by Cartier-Bresson, which would actually work against doing those kind of politicized photographs.
That's right. He wanted to describe the life of black people in South Africa, the majority.
Did you become friends?
Oh, yes, I'd say so.
He was born in Ersterust, a black freehold township of Pretoria. What does freehold mean? I've always been curious.
Isn't that a British property term?
Mm-hmm.
Even today in London, if you buy a house, you often buy leasehold, where you own the property for 60 or 80 years. But freehold is you actually own the property, I believe.
But
I don't know what it means, why the town was called Freehold.
And how did he come to take up photography? Was that something he knew he wanted from a young age?
Yes. He saw, from the first time he ever saw someone with a camera, I don't know how old he was, 10 or 12, he had a passion to have one, and some friend of the family actually presented him with one at an early age.
He left school before he graduated. Was that because he felt that Bantu education wasn't going to help him in becoming a photographer?
That's what he said. And in fact, at the point where he would have taken his high school diploma was the year Bantu education was implemented, and he didn't want a diploma that said Bantu.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, he had his status changed, didn't he?
That's a remarkable story. I know the steps, but he went through all the bureaucratic steps of proving that he was not an African, which he indeed was, but a member of the colored group, which is basically means mixed breed in South African terms. And he, because he spoke fluent Afrikaans, which is was the language of the majority of colored people, he was able to pull it off. But he studied the bureaucratic tests and passed them.
And he also passed the pen and the hair test.
No, I don't think he did the pen and the hair test. The way he described it to me was they had a few tricks. One was if the pen passed through your hair, then you were colored and not African. The other was they would say to you, how tall were you when you were 10 years old? And it was a folk belief of the bureaucrats that a colored person would do what most Westerners would do, which would be to stick out their hand palm down, whereas an African would normally do that. I don't know if this is true at all. This is what they
palm up?
Palm up. And so I remember Ernest, when he told that to me, he said, you know, he knew he was in when the man asked that question. He said, I took a lot of time. I stood up slowly and I raised my hand and then I went like this.
He turned it
palm down. Mm-hmm. And from that moment on, he was a colored.
Now, he also
meant, by the way, he didn't have, I mean, the key point there is he didn't have to carry a pass. He had a colored identity card. He lived like an African, but he passed as a colored.
He also had the spelling of his last name changed from K-O-L-E to C-O-L-E.
Correct.
K-O-L-E would have identified him immediately as someone who would be classified African?
I guess.
He met a Canadian photographer, Struan Robertson. They began to share a studio in a dark room. Was that legal at the time?
Yes. I think, I mean, they could always say he was working for Robertson, but he had worked on Drum Magazine, and that would have been legal. And you know, I'm not sure I ever met Robertson, but you can see from his essay in the Hasselblad book how close he was to Ernest, and Ernest dedicated. He was one of the people to whom Ernest dedicated House of Bondage.
My guest is Joseph Lelieveld. We're talking about Ernest Cole, who is a photographer whose images, many of his images, I mean people in this audience, know without knowing that Ernest Cole took them, because they are the kinds of images we associate with life in South Africa during the apartheid years. There's an exhibit called Ernest Cole Photographer currently at NYU's Gray Art Gallery. There's also a fabulous book that accompanies that exhibit with an introduction by his former studio mate. You wrote the introduction to Ernest Cole's most famous book, House of Bondage. Was that after apartheid was over?
Or? No. That book came out in 1967. I think I wrote that book. It says that I wrote it in New Delhi. That's when I lived there. The remarkable thing is, if you compare the two books, come to the sort of core of the Ernest sad story in New York, because he lost most of his prints and most of his negatives, and what's at the Gray Gallery is a kind of miracle of recreation and restoration. But there are books in House of Bondage. Pictures in House of Bondage that are not in this wonderful book, and there are wonderful pictures in this book that are not in House of Bondage.
You helped sneak some of them out of the country, didn't you?
By the way, we
do have some of his images on our show page if you are unfamiliar with his work. How did he capture the images he got, especially the pictures of prisons and other institutions? Was he allowed to just go into those places and shoot whatever he wanted?
Some people have the impression that he got himself arrested to get into jail. I kind of doubt that. I suspect, but I don't know, that what he did was to befriend some African cops and ask them to find situations where there were no whites around where he could get in.
Although he must have carried a small camera, because
he carried it in a brown paper bag. That's described it. And on top of the camera, he had a sandwich and a piece of fruit, and he had a way of opening a flap on the bag in order to expose the lens.
At one point, he was in a traffic accident, broke both of his kneecaps.
On his motor scooter, yes.
And that led to these photographs that he took of people in the hospital?
That's correct.
And then there's a very powerful series of photos of mine workers. Where were they taken?
Well, the great mines, which had a labor force, each individual gold mine would have a labor force of several thousand people, and they all were in a fenced compound. There was no easy coming and going, and I guess he got smuggled in much the same way.
There's one photo of a line of nude men lined up waiting to be examined by doctors. Nobody noticed he had a camera?
Well, I don't think there was presumably no white mine official in the room when that occurred. That's an interesting photo because that shows one of the strengths of the exhibition, this wonderful exhibition at the Gray. If you compare the House of Bondage rendition of that photo, it has been cropped in order to focus on the body. If you look at the full frame photo, which was the photo that Ernest printed, which is on exhibition at the gallery, you can see that it's a much more powerful picture than the cropped one.
And then he did a series of photos of domestic workers who worked for white families, also amazing photos. But then he left. Was he forced to leave?
No. He had this project to produce a book like the Cartier-Bresson book on Moscow and present it to the world. He knew it couldn't be published in South Africa. He knew that if he got the photos out and he stayed in South Africa, he'd be finished as a photographer. So I don't think he thought too deeply. That was so much his mission, to complete this body of work and bring it out of the country. And he applied for a passport on the excuse that he was a Catholic, that he was making a pilgrimage to Lourdes. He was a serious Catholic, but he had no intention of going to Lourdes. He went to Magnum Agency in Paris and just showed up at the doorstep. And a great French photographer, Marc Ribot, came down and looked to see what he had. And from then, it was only a matter of time before the book came out after that.
And then he got a grant from the Ford Foundation to chronicle the life of American blacks in the South.
Yeah.
How well did that project go? Because the end of his life is a very sad story.
It did not go very well, as far as I know. He showed me a little of that work early on, and I have a vague memory of one touching picture of a girl walking through a farm field with her younger sister, which doesn't exist anymore. But South Africa was really his story. And although he was a brilliant photographer and in many respects a brilliant man, he didn't really find his bearings in America when he went off to do that work. He thought America was South Africa, and there was not much difference between Jim Crow and apartheid. But this was 1967. The civil rights movement had already had its great victories. The Civil Rights Act had been passed, and of course there was much deprivation in the American South, as there still is, South and North and East and West. But Ernest. Ernest didn't get a particular feeling for America.
Do any of those pictures survive?
I don't think many do, no. I don't know. Maybe the Hasselblad family.
He seems to have spent much of his time homeless or staying with friends for short periods of time. Was he emotionally disturbed?
He had an apartment for a period in an artist community in the West Village near here called Westbeth. Mm-hmm. And he traveled a good deal to Sweden. So he was in and out of the country. I myself was out of the country for much of this period, so I can't speak, you know, with authority about that. But to answer your question directly, there were some strange behaviors that he exhibited, and I don't like to sling psychological jargon around. I'm not qualified to do it. But from my viewing of the TV program Monk, I would say he was probably OCD.
Well, he died in 1990 at the age of 49. He had pancreatic cancer. And that was just a few months after Mandela was released from prison.
It was a week after.
Wow.
I was standing at his bedside at New York Hospital and when we watched Mandela walk out and Winnie Mandela walk out of Polsmoor Prison.
How did the photos wind up in the Hasselblad archives?
Well, that's a curious story. Ernest lost everything he had in New York when he became homeless. He left it with a sort of rooming hotel where he had been living. This is in the mid-70s now, called the Pickwick Arms in the East 70s. And they discarded it after a while. I found him when he was homeless. He and I went there and tried to recover the stuff, and they took down a ledger and showed how it was all auctioned off according to New York regulations. But I remembered that he had told me that there was another valise in Stockholm. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned this to some photographer friends, and eventually it was located.
And the exhibition, Ernest Cole Photographer, is on view at the Gray Art Gallery at 100 Washington Square East until December 6th. You can see some selections from it on our show page at WNYC.org. There's also a gorgeous book of the photographs that still exist from his photos that he took to chronicle apartheid in South Africa. And my great thanks to Joseph Lelieveld for being on our show today to talk about it. What do you think his legacy is? Is he influencing other photographers?
I can't answer that, but I think it remains the most powerful statement of that period that exists and should always be valued in South Africa and by photographers around the world.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you.